This program is brought to you by Cabinet, a nonprofit arts organization based in Brooklyn, New York. Cabinet depends on your support to continue our activities. For more information, visit us online at cabinetmagazine.org.
The following recording is of Ordinary Lives, a presentation by photographer Rania Matar as part of Arte East's Across Histories lecture series. It took place on December 16th, 2009.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Okay, well, I want to say thank you to Arte East and to Cabinet Magazine for inviting me to come and show my work. I'm going to be showing slides of images that I took over the past few years in Lebanon. And if we have time at the end, I'm going to show a small body of work that I just started, very different in color, called The Girl in Her Room. So the focus of this work that I will show first is on the Middle East, women and children mainly. Lebanon is interesting to me because I grew up in Lebanon, and you see all the different, it's between the East and the West, and it's the history of the past few years have been pretty interesting in some sense. I'm interested in women and children. I am a mother, I'm a woman, I'm a mother of four kids, and I'm very drawn to the women, and I feel they bear the brunt of all that goes on. But if you look at their faces and their lives, they're just like all of us, wanting to give the best life they can for their children and move on. And their resilience with everything is just, I find, inspiring. I'm not trying to represent Lebanon in this work, so I just picked subjects that were interesting to me. And a lot of them were mainly because maybe this is the Lebanon I did not know as well. I call it Ordinary Lives, which is the title of the book, that if you want to buy, is there. And it's part of a few bodies of work that I did at different times. One is the aftermath of war, which is pretty obvious from the title what it is. A lot of it is from after the 2006 war. Part of it is about the forgotten people, which is life in the Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon. Part of it is about the veil. When I grew up in Lebanon, many of you probably know that as well, there were very few women who wore the veil, and I became interested in documenting the changes in the past few years. And then very recently, I just started this new project that part of it made it to the book, but not quite, about the Christian Arabs. And I would like to expand that to the wider Middle East. So I will just start showing, and please feel free to ask any questions throughout. I would just say something. I mean, I grew up in Lebanon. I moved to the U.S. in 84 to go to college here, and I never went back to live in Lebanon. I go back and forth, but I'm based in Boston, and I became, as an outsider, I became more interested in photographing that. I feel like people who live there sometimes don't see the stuff that's immediately next to them. And as an outsider, you could in a way see the country in Western eyes, but as an insider, I can understand people and the culture. So I hope it comes through. I just start with this image. Most of my work have people in it. I just like to start with that. This is left over from the civil war in Lebanon. And, you know, you see through the destruction, this building and behind that standing. And in a way for me, it's like as the people do that as well, the people I photograph. This is in Ait Ashab in southern Lebanon after 2006. And again, you will see a lot of this in my photos. I feel like this is quite a bit prevalent in Lebanon, where you have this destruction and life going on at the same time, in the same life, in the same image. So this is a rocket hole behind, and the girl seems oblivious to it, sits on this very ornate sofa. Am I speaking loud enough? It's okay? Okay. And this is in Beirut, in the suburbs after 2006 as well. And the whole area was destroyed, and it was fascinating to me. People came and would put the plastic chairs and where the homes used to be so they could reconnect with their neighbors. And that's along the same line. It's also in Beirut, and the woman went shopping, and the guy was selling shoes, exactly where his shoe store used to be. And a lot of kids were looking for copper and metal in the rubble, so they could go sell them and make pocket money.
That's in the Dahlia.
Now this is in southern Lebanon, in Ayat al-Shaab again, and this girl is juggling. And I would say for about a year, I was printing an image where you see the balls, and I realized I like it that you don't see the balls. There were a lot of foreign volunteers who came and would organize camps for teenagers. So this is the Lebanese flag, and the boy is jumping rope on the building. So I kind of like that you can't quite tell what's going on. And, well, this for me summarizes it quite a bit of what I would like the work to be about. I feel this girl is all about resilience and looking forward, ignore the destruction behind her. She's wearing a Barbie t-shirt, which makes it a little ironic. What was going on there is that the crane in the back, there was a, what do you call the ball, the wrecking ball that was destroying the buildings because they were so inaccessible. So people would come and they would wait all day for the buildings to get, to fall down so they could look for their belongings in the rubble. And you know, it's all concrete construction over there, so it would take a whole day. So this was by 5 in the afternoon and nothing went down. But people would go and actually they would find papers and stuff in the rubble. But you also see the mom looking at her daughter smiling despite what's behind. So this is in southern Lebanon. And this is in Saida. And here the woman, this is in Ayat al-Shaab, and she was just overlooking the village. Now I'm going to show images from the Palestinian refugee camps. This is the woman's ID, and you could see how young she is on her ID photo. This is how long, this is her status, this is the paper that states her status as a refugee, and this is how young she was when she became a refugee. These are the whole, I don't know how many people have, sorry, she's my friend. In the refugee camps, they were originally camps, and it feels like they've been built slowly over the years in some kind of very haphazard manner. So this is, and they gradually became like kind of having this semi-permanent, semi-temporary structure without ever becoming permanent. So these are water pipes that people brought from the street, and they started over the years kind of distributing to people's homes. And in the camps, I find always very endearing how the kids are very resilient and always play with whatever is around them. These are all hanging wires that, kind of scary. You could imagine the thing just going into fire any minute, and kids are just oblivious to it. This is a family who used to live in a corrugated metal home. This is in southern Lebanon in Burj al-Shamali. So it's one of the camps that is the worst off, and it's actually walled in, so people cannot bring in construction material. And in 2006, for a few weeks, they opened up the border, and then they built this home for these families, the NGOs, non-governmental organization. But then they closed them again, and they never had a window put in. And the woman is nursing the baby in the background, which this is. I'm going through them. If you have questions, please ask. this is, I'll just say briefly about this next few. These were taken a little more recently in 2007, and they were in the Bedawi camp, which is in northern Lebanon in Tripoli, after the Nahr al-Barid camp, which was, I mean, kind of completely destroyed. So about 40,000 refugees in Nahr al-Barid, 30 of them went to the Bedawi camp that was too tiny to house them. So all these kids and their families were put into schools, and they separated the classroom with tarp. And this boy had just taken a shower, basically. But I just like to point the little girl at the bottom in case you don't see her. So this is there as well, and they were cooking in the hallways. The UN agency gave them little gas cookers that you could use. And it was at that time during Ramadan, so they would lay the food. I mean, in the one space they had, they would cook, lay the food, then put it away, and then sleep, all of that within the little 12 by 12 area they had, which was in the their area of the classroom. And the NGOs were distributing food for the kids, for them. I think. And here, it kind of overlaps a little bit, all the projects. And this is, I'm just showing images on the veil. I became interested, actually. I was in a camp photographing, and there was a little girl, the picture was coming up, who was about my daughter's age, who spent about an hour putting the veil on, and she would change colors and then put it down and then start braiding it. And I realized for the first time that there was such a fashion element to that. It was like my daughter in the morning straightening her hair for an hour. So I became interested in trying to understand why more women are wearing the hijab. And I call it actually the veil, modesty, fashion, devotion, or statement. And from what I could gather, I really thought in different ways it's all of the above. I found that funny because, like, the mannequins there are very kind of Western looking. and the scarves are all made in Korea. So. That's the girl. I mean, it just happened. The doll was there. She was 9 years old. Her mom thought she was too young to start wearing the veil, did not want her to do it. And she insisted. It became kind of the thing where all the girls her age are doing it. So you want to do it just because to be like everybody else. You know, kind of all our girls wear Uggs. And as well, there's the beauty element in it. I mean, I don't know. I hope it speaks for itself. I don't know. And this was at a hairdresser. And I mean, usually if a woman is covered, I'm not allowed to photograph her, even though I could be in the room with her uncovered, but because some men might see the photo, and he or she was okay with it because it's from the back. But it's interesting because she did spend about an hour getting her hair done, and then she covered it all up. And I call this one newspapers. I just like to point out it was a happy accident that the only woman covering her face is the one who is not veiled. Okay, and this is kind of part of a little bit of newer work. These are nuns. These are Greek Orthodox nuns. And I like to mix them in because really at this point I think the covering becomes, you could ask a lot of questions about it. I mean, they look the same. This was in Ashrafiyya in Lebanon, in Beirut. Knista Saide. Okay. So I started more recently to go the other way and started photographing more of, I haven't edited this work as much, but I'm including some. So I went and photographed in the convents and the monasteries and kind of the rituals of Christian light in Lebanon. This is at a convent next to Jbeil. Rafa Di Serafan. And these were women who were raiding, they called them the women of the opposition of Hezbollah and the UN, guarding an event. This is in downtown Beirut. Downtown. This is in Tripoli, and these were soldiers that were killed in that Nahr al-Bared war as well. And there's a tradition, I mean, in the Middle East where people die, because they, when they're martyrs, they, the pictures get put up all over their villages. And this is in Beirut, and this is what I was saying, sometimes people don't notice when you live there. I mean, this is very close to my mother-in-law's house, and whenever you drive, you have to drive by it.
Sodiko.
And when I was telling my sister-in-law that, you know, every time we drive by this building, my kids are very fascinated by it, and she had no idea what building I was talking about, and she drives by it every day. So I think it's sometimes it's good to see it with fresh eyes.
They made it a museum. That's why they didn't. That was a lawsuit.
Yeah, and no, now it's all covered. But the funny thing is, and I don't have a picture of it, there's a little sign, but you can't quite see it, but there's a functioning hairdresser in there. Open. Yeah. It's right by the Saad Hariri picture. But I, you know, this one, I like the Gaulois in front. So. No, not in the building. There's a hairdresser called Ephraim. This is at Descens. The reason I put these is just to put the other stuff in context, not to try to document more of that. But when women, if you see women wearing the veil, just to put that, it's not a country where women are wearing veil. Women are doing it because they want to. And then I don't think you would even see something like that in the U.S. Actually, I think my photos went out of order a little bit. This is the Côte aux Pigeons. And This is Erdir Nouriye. This is a nun at Sayyidat Nouriye. Okay, I think my work a little bit went out of order, but that's okay. This is I'm going to show extremely different work coming up. It's called A Girl in Her Womb. I have a teenage girl, and I became very interested in photographing girls of that age. You know what? I'm kind of bummed because, hold on, sorry. Before I get to that, you know what? I'm so sorry. I'm going to just go. It's completely out of sequence. I didn't read. I don't know what happened. Slideshow. I'm sorry. I didn't put them so they go in order. This is part of the rest of the work. It's completely coming in a haphazard manner. I apologize. This was part of the work on the aftermath, where I say always there's traces of the war and traces of life going at the same time, even through the objects. This is a rocket hole in the kitchen where people just live there as if it wasn't even there. I was stuck in that war in 2006, and being a mother, I just needed to get the kids out of there. This is the only picture I took, and then I went back right after the war and photographed the aftermath. And this was at the Lebanese-Syrian border. And it's when I took this photo that I decided that I wanted to come back, because you realize every single person has a story. I'm sorry, this is so out of sequence. This is the picture that was supposed to come after the other one. This is in the refugee camp, and I don't know, I just find that to be a very beautiful moment. And there's a cigarette there on the floor. If you guys, you Lebanese, would appreciate that it just got put down long enough for the woman to nurse the baby. And this, I just put in this photo because, well, now we're out of sequence, but this is the same family, and this past summer, and the girls are 5 years older. That's that same girl who was sitting there. And And this is the same picture, the girl who was leaning on the wall in the other image, and what I said, the window's open still. Life doesn't change. And this is in Burj Al Baraj, no? And here for me, it's like this is a happy accident of photography. I did not mean for the girl to be out of focus like that, but it was the movement. And I actually now like it symbolically in a way, because the older people are there and they're anchored, and maybe she has time to go somewhere. Now there's just a few images I would show that I took this past summer. I went for the first time to Jerusalem in the West Bank. I just included some, they're not in the book, and they're not. The work is not quite edited, but this is in a refugee camp in Bethlehem. And this is in Jerusalem by the wall. And that's, again, I found pretty fascinating. I mean, you see the laundry hanging and the people living there, they became oblivious to this monstrosity behind them. This is in Jaffa. Okay, and this is now jumping back, sorry, to the veil. This is at AUB. And if you notice, the shape of the eyes and the shape of the opening with the low rise of the pants are almost the same. And it's kind of funny. I mean, I talked to this woman quite a bit. She is the only woman veiled in that manner in the whole university. And when I spoke to her, she hardly spoke Arabic. She is... from a family, I mean, she's Lebanese, grew up in Michigan, her father's Christian, so, and she's studying medicine. So for me, it became so interesting to talk to her and to realize that some people could actually do that completely through her, because she wants to do it. And she had a whole logic to it that she actually felt liberated putting that on, because maybe it's hiding, whatever it is, I'm not condoning, but that's what she said, that she felt liberated, but she does not have to rely on her appearances in front of anybody.
She was not converted?
She converted, yeah. And this is funny, this is in Hamra, this woman, dressed very modestly, she's a Shia from the suburb, but she has a beauty parlor and piercing and tattoo. And she was absolutely lovely, actually. I went in and she was doing the eyebrows of this woman who was not very modestly dressed. And then by the end of the, she let me photograph as much as I want. Then she asked me who does my eyebrows. And I said, some woman in the US. And she's like, they're terrible. And she made me lay down there. I had two cameras on my stomach and she started working my eyebrows. And she said, you guys get all the reputation, but we are the real thing. So I think it's just very interesting because appearances are not always what, like, you know, the way she dresses and all this. And she told me that I need Botox. She's had it. And here these girls were dressed all in black. They were college girls because of Ashura, which is a Muslim holiday. And they were giggling and they wouldn't let me look at it, but they were looking at pictures of men. So. Okay. I'm sorry, I don't know what's going on with this. Okay, should I just go on to the next work, very different? Okay, this is work, I wanted to do something, okay, you know what, I've got to have to sequence this stuff, one sec, excuse me. I should have done this right up front. I have a teenage girl and Okay, I don't know if anybody could help me here. Anybody know? I'm not sure what's going on. I'm sorry. I want to make it to go into slideshow again. If when I'm clicking on the image, I have Photoshop opening. Oh, it's behind it somehow. Okay. This was supposed to be the last photo, so I'll stop it here. So I'll say very briefly, I mean, I have a teenage girl, and I became very interested. I mean, in all of my work, you see that I kind of tend to focus on women and girls, and I wanted to start doing something. I live in Boston, more local, and eventually combine it with more work in the Middle East. And I had a girl who was a tomboy, and I started seeing all the transformation, and I realized how fascinating of an age it is. With all the self-consciousness and the awkwardness that comes with it. And I wanted to photograph her with her friends, and then I realized that they're all kind of putting a show on in front of each other. Nobody's really being themselves. So I started this thing where I wanted to photograph each girl in the place that she would choose. And the first few I photographed were in their bedrooms, and I realized this is the actually perfect setting because it represents the girls very well. So I started photographing girls in their bedrooms, and there's a small selection of that here. I photographed, I'd say, over 120 right now. And I eventually started combining girls in Lebanon, girls in the refugee camps, and a couple of girls even from Jerusalem when I went this summer. I also asked the girls to write me something. That's it. I'll just go through those real quick. And it was interesting because in almost all the cases, you have the girls with the attitude, but then you always have the kind of the stuffed animals or the holding on to the... I leave it long enough so you could read what's on there. And this was taken in Bethlehem. And again, it was interesting to see sometimes the cultures where in this country, each girl has her room and it's very individualistic. And when you go to the Middle East, even though you do have that, it depends on society, but also there's very much a sense of family. So I found that the rooms are not as big a deal as it is for each girl here, somehow. And this is in Burj Shamali refugee camp again. This is a girl in London, she's Persian. I want to try to do more of that actually as well, how to girls adjust to all this, to Western culture. I think that's it. Sorry, I didn't. Okay. Okay, that's it, unless... Okay, I should close that so you guys stop watching, looking at my screen. Okay, do you have questions? Or I'll keep it open here.
Do you find that within the same families, for example, Lebanon, different girls within the same family, some of them might decide to...
Yes, actually, I found quite a bit. I mean, it was tough because I had no sense here of how much time, so I kind of tried to throw a little bit. Yes, there is quite a bit of that, actually, because I found the veil very interesting, and I'm not a scholar on the subject. I mean, I'm not even Muslim. I just became very interested in... I feel like when you're living in the U.S. here, you probably all experienced that. All the news we get from the Middle East are about kind of terrorism, kidnappings, bombings, whatever. And I became interested in kind of showing that this the other side of that. And the veil for me was, in a way, discovering myself as well. That the more I felt that the more people were attacking Islam, the more women were taking refuge in that and wearing the veil, in a sense, almost as a reaction to that. So I think it's spreading. It becomes almost a social event, where a social phenomenon, where a lot of girls want to do it because all their friends are doing it. So sometimes I found girls who would wear it, who are thinking about it, but are not quite there. So they would start wearing long sleeves, but not quite put the veil. But because and they would explain to me that once they put it on, it's not a good thing to take it off, because then it looks like you're failing at that. So, I mean, yes. So yes, the short answer would be yes. Yeah.
But she decided to wear a scarf, and in part, nobody else in the family was doing this, and she decided to do it, and in part it was to see what the reaction of the family would be, as that's how she explains it. And then the reaction was one of kind of surprise, maybe a little shock, maybe just kind of comprehension, and then she decided that the reaction is actually very interesting, and she continued.
Yeah, I mean, I found a lot of that very interesting. A lot of the younger generation is doing it quite a bit for different reasons, but I found that quite a bit. And even though if the mothers are veiled, they did it way later in their life. They didn't do it as younger girls. So, anyway. Okay, any questions, anybody? The black and white is film, the color is digital.
Why is that?
Maybe it's also the timing. I think the question is really why to shoot something black and white versus color, I think. The black and white, I like to do it as well in film. I control the full process. I mean, I develop the film and I do everything from beginning to end. The color, anyway, I would have to send out the negatives and do all this. And I feel like, in a way, I control it with the digital because I work on my files. And I think it's also a sign maybe of the times, but the fact is also I think it's a matter of when you do a project to decide if you want to do it in color or black and white. And some things call for themselves, for it to be in one or the other. I mean, I used to do black and white because I loved, used to work in the dark room and the craft of it as well. And this is what I was doing photography for. The girls' project, in a way I found would be almost a shame to do it in black and white because I mean, the color is everything in it. And it's in a way nice for me because I feel like I'm reinvigorated with something completely new. And I mean, the Middle East work, I would keep doing it. It's just nice to do something in parallel as well.
So.
You know, it's funny. I'm glad because I'm part of all these cultures, so I could fit in no matter where. I mean, I'm photographing people, and whether it's refugee camps or the girls, I'm in their very private space. So it's not that I'm invisible. I am there, and they're aware of me. I spend quite a bit of time with them, so eventually they kind of get comfortable. Before I start shooting, I mean, it depends. Some people seem to not care if there's a lot of kids, and I might start shooting right away because it's something very interesting. With the girls, I tend to kind of talk to them a little bit, and they're very self-conscious in the beginning. But I mean, I try to make myself invisible, and I think the fact that I do speak the language in Lebanon and in the camps is a huge asset. I mean, like, men could not take the pictures that I'm taking because they would not be allowed in there. And if you didn't speak the language, I think there will always be a barrier that, you know.
They have no problem taking their photos?
The ones who had problems, I didn't photograph. The ones who are here, I mean, no, yeah, and I always go back and I give them photos. And I mean, I keep in touch with the families, which is like what I was showing the family. I don't know if you were here, that I photographed 5 years later. I mean, I always go back to them. And I mean, now it's just the barriers are down. So I could arrive, just say hello, and in a way kind of start shooting. I mean, they know me and I know them. And I try to be as honest as I can with them because they're pretty vulnerable. I mean, I take the picture and go away and it could go anywhere. So some of them, okay, I would never see again, like the one on the streets, whatever. And but the ones where I know where they live, I try to go back. And eventually I'd like to give them a book. If they, like there's a family where I have so many photos of them, I'd like to go and give them the book. The one that I wish I would see again and give her the photo is the Barbie girl that's on the cover of my book. But I don't know how to find her.
I would call it ordinary life, but in an unordinary situation.
I hope, yeah, yes, I mean,
it is,
absolutely. And some people say you should have called it extraordinary lives. I'm like, no, but the nice thing for me is
no,
that
it's ordinary.
They're just normal
the whole
people.
Situation is not ordinary.
Absolutely. You know, Anthony Shadid, I don't know who knows him, wrote the text in the book, and he says that, actually. The last sentence is something like that, which I... So. Thank you, guys. And yeah. No, but... Oh, you missed them. Not only that, I could leave it for whoever wants to watch it. It goes quick. But I want to apologize. Actually, if people want to see it quickly, I could go. I'm sorry that I didn't I could put it on autoplay, absolutely. Whoever wants to see it could see if somebody wants whatever. I really am horrified that I didn't just press show it by file name and that they went out of sequence. I'm sorry. I kept wondering where that photo. It took me a while to realize that it was not there. So how do I go back, though? Hold on.
I also want to let everyone know that we have Raina's book here available for signing, and we're able to take payments with them as well, too. So they're in the back if anyone wants to.
I've put it as a slideshow, so whoever wants to see it in the right sequence can, and you don't have to listen to me blabber anymore. Thank you.